104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with a big story of the day.
Well, I mean, he grew up in Colorado.
Derek White up and in. Oh, mama! Russell up. Derek White. White. Two more for Derek. Murray knocked away. Here comes Derek White. Yes!
White gets it back. Seven on the shot clock.
Oh, what the heck? Why not? White. Pulls it home from three. Oh, let the Buffalo roll.
So, the game's over. And I'm tweeting out, just kind of bummed, Chad, D-Mac, Chad Brown. I'm like, what a bummer. Great game for White. Colorado kid. Hopefully we can do better. Right. But I didn't put any commas in. Like, I just paused there.
Uh-huh.
So my tweet looked like this. What a bummer. Great day for White Colorado kid.
Ooh, scandalous.
Hopefully we can get better.
Oh, did your grandma like it? She liked that tweet?
Grandma loved it.
Okay. Bunch of grandmas were liking that tweet.
So I was like, because I didn't realize what, as yeah. Somebody pointed out, why is it going to be white kids? Why do you only care about white kids? No, his name. I'm like, okay, good point.
Right.
Should have, you know.
Commas matter.
Commas matter.
Let's eat, comma, grandma. Let's eat, grandma. They're two different things.
Two different things.
Yes.
So maybe even exclamation points, question marks matter. I mean,
yeah.
Punctuation matters.
It does. It does. Yes, but go Buffs. Go Derek White.
Yeah. Oh, man. What are you going to do? What are you going to do?
You know, if you're the Nuggets, I think you learn as much from you can as you can from this experience. You take away the experience of the new level of playoff basketball and what that means and how you have to find somebody on your team who can overcome. They don't have that guy right now who just give him the ball in certain situations is going to make it happen.
Here's Michael Malone about last night and Derek White.
There's no doubt in my mind that Derek White, the last couple of days, has been reminded about Jamal Murray's fourth quarter performance. Derek White came out like he hadn't eaten in 2 days. He came out hungry. He came out pissed off. And he sent a very loud and clear message. Now, I'm anxious to see our guys. How do we respond to that? Where's your pride? Mm. You know, where's your toughness? Where's your grit? So game four is going to be a great insight into who we are as a team, especially our young players, especially Jamal Murray. Great fourth quarter. We win the game in game two. Well, he's going to learn as a young kid, it can't be just one quarter. It's got to be every night.
Poof.
Like it. Harsh words from the coach, but true words.
Where's your pride?
True words. I dig it.
That dude can coach. That Michael Malone, I'm telling you. Supporting Jamal Murray, being tough on him right there. And you know what? At this level, it really is on the players much more than it's on the coaches. This is on you guys. Who are you guys? We have put you in the position for you to succeed. I know the fans, everybody's going nuts about like Will Barton. Did you see that some fan has sent up a GoFundMe page to bench Will Barton?
I'm not surprised by that. Earl Boykin's been talking about it since before the series started. This was going to be an issue, and then it's an issue.
Yeah, but if you think a coach really knows what he's doing, and I think Michael Malone really knows what he's doing, I got to give him a little leeway on the decisions that he makes. Because if I ultimately say, yeah, no, I think you are a great coach, and I do think he's a great coach, then there's reasonings behind what you're doing that may not be aware to us on the surface. So I don't think you can have it both ways. I don't think you can say, oh, yeah, well, you know, he's a great coach, but he's really terrible X, Y, and Z. I kind of get that sometimes. People, he's a good regular season coach, but a terrible playoff coach. See, I don't think that was the case with George Karl. I just think that there was so many years that he didn't get the Nuggets beyond the first round. To me, it told me that there's something about his preparation and coaching that just didn't work out over time. I don't know that about Michael Malone. Here we are. I mean, it's not looking good, obviously.
It sounds like he's open, at least, to benching Will Barton. So,
yeah.
To your point,
we'll see.
We trust him, and then we don't trust him.
Right.
He's got a plan.
He's the same guy.
He's got a plan, but now the plan's changing, and we all said this should have been a plan from the beginning.
When you got to the when you were the Steelers, how quickly did you guys make the playoffs? Rookie year, you made the playoffs?
Every year.
How'd your team do your rookie year, you can remember?
My rookie year, we lost to Kansas City in the wild card round, Joe Montana.
Okay. Were they there in the playoffs the year before, too, before you were there?
Yes.
Okay.
We knocked on the door a few times.
You guys are a pretty experienced team then. It's not like it was foreign to you guys. Going to the playoffs was no regular occurrence.
Yes, it was.
Okay. So that must have been, I mean, it's Joe Montana, but still, that must have been pretty disappointing.
It was crushing.
Yeah.
We got a punt blocked in the fourth quarter, and then Joe Montana executed a complete Joe Cool last minute fourth quarter drive to put them ahead.
Is that Montana with the Chiefs or with the...
Chiefs.
With the Chiefs.
Yes.
Yeah, people forget Joe Montana. Well, I guess it's the year that...
I think he took
they lost to the Bills
in the championship game.
Yeah, Joe Montana took the Chiefs to the AFC championship game. So that was 94. That was the last year the Bills made the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Do you know who I was sitting next to in that AFC championship game?
No. I have no way of knowing.
That's a really dumb question on my part.
Do you want to hear?
I'm sorry. I would love to hear that. My wife pointed out that it's an annoying habit that I do that. Like, I ask unanswerable questions, so I apologize. I was sitting next to...
Okay, there we go. Uh-huh.
John Wayne Bobbitt, the dude that...
Whoa!
Yes.
Okay.
Remember the guy that got chopped off by Lorena, thrown in the woods? They found it, reattached it.
Yeah.
He did, like, porno movies. He was doing... He went on tour. Like, he went to a lot of radio stations over time, but he was from the Western New York area, and he was a Bills fan. So we had him on the air. It was a big deal at the time. And we had him on the air, and we did a whole promotion about meeting, you know, John Wayne Bobbitt.
So he was in the press box?
Not in the press box. I just had seats in the stands for that particular game.
Okay.
I was sitting. So the promotion was go to the game with John Wayne Bobbitt. So it was a pretty big promotion.
Right.
You're going to an AFC championship game. You're with, you know... One of these, you know, one of the first sort of celebrity for no reason guys, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
Because there was a whole trial with that.
Right.
And this is the days of court TV, so you could get all the lurid details about.
You still love all that stuff.
She chopped it off.
Oh, my goodness, not the details.
But think about it. She chopped it off. She holds on to it. She drives in a car.
And throws
it out the window. They find it. Reattach it and it works.
That's the whole thing is just fast.
I was like, can you imagine being the cop that actually found it? Like, hey, I got it. Whoa. Tim, why don't you come here and pick it up?
Somebody got some gloves and a Ziploc.
So, yeah, I watched the game with John Wayne Bobbitt. It was like two winners, me, John Wayne Bobbitt, and like his brother or something. I don't know. Anyways.
Well, did you talk to him during the game?
He's one of the dumber human beings I've ever met in my life. Okay. Like, talking to John Bobbitt was really a chore. And I was more or less done with talking to him for, you know, here it is. He's here. You're sitting there. And, of course, the winner's, you know, is 2 seconds of being interested in John Bobbitt. And then it's like, we got really good seats for the AFC Championship game.
Okay.
I mean, that's increasingly, you know, it was probably a little bit more exciting to be sitting next to me than, you know, this guy. I mean, like, how long are those conversations with a dude that had that? I mean, it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting story. Don't get me wrong.
Right.
But, I mean, you know.
I think we all got a few questions.
Yeah, I think after about 10 minutes, though, I mean,
you tapped him out, yeah.
Yeah.
Does it hurt? Does it still work?
You get to all the basics.
So how sharp was the knife?
Right, it's all that sort of stuff.
Yes. Was there sawing action involved? Was it more like a samurai slice?
You know, our vast majority of our eyes has no... Just Google it, okay? Just Google John Wayne Bobbitt, and you'll see one of the more bizarre American stories of all time.
I think I'm done after those three questions.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
I think the Nuggets can sort of get it back together. Avalanche.
This series? Or get it back together for next year and do
better
in the playoffs.
Do you think it's done? Do you really think it's done?
It's... Yeah. Well... I feel very strongly that this is going to be done. Not with certainty. Anything can happen.
Yeah.
They haven't adjusted well. Yeah.
Okay. No. I think it can be done, but then again, I get once your team gets into the playoffs, I lose all sorts of, you know, perspective. I just hope for the best. Because, you know, the season is long and filled with terror. It's dark. It's a Melisandre Game of Thrones. You don't watch Game of Thrones? You haven't started watching Game of Thrones?
No. This weekend. I'll probably get a couple episodes in. But
all right.
I just think that the playoff experience in basketball may matter more there than in other places.
It might, yeah.
And because
it feels like it might, yeah.
And I think the game changes more significantly. Yeah. In football, the physicality picks up because guys are willing to lay more on the line. But the game... pretty much remains the same.
Yeah, and if you think about the Avalanche, what a game that's going to be tonight. By the way, Lodo with the Rockies against the Phillies, Bryce Harper, and the Avs. I think they're dropping the puck at about 10:30 p.m. Tonight. No, it's like 8 o'clock, though, right? It's another one of these absurdly late starts. But Lodo is going to be popping tonight, for sure. Mm-hmm. It's going to be awesome. The Avalanche were in the playoffs last year. I think that... does matter.
It does.
You know, they lost, but they've got a hot goalie, they got a coach with more experience, they got players with more experience, and then they get this absurd spark plug in Cale Makar. And by the way, at 4:30, we're going to talk to Cale Makar's college coach, Greg Carvel, and get the behind-the-scenes story of what, like, that life in his life was like from being in the Frozen Four, winning the Hobey Baker, playing for the Avs, and how he got there in the first place, which is pretty remarkable considering how good this kid actually is. But the fact of the matter, Chad, experience probably does matter, and maybe in the NBA more than anything, because it's hard to recognize who this team is.
Strike the experience line, probably line from your statement, and I think that's absolutely true. Can a unexperienced playoff team win a series and win a game? Sure, it's going to happen. But time has shown us that the more experienced team just has a better opportunity and a better chance.
It is cool, though, that White, a Colorado kid, who I'm putting the commas in by pauses, who went to CU, though, had the night that he had.
Pulls it home for three. Oh, let the Buffalo roam.
I love it. Let the Buffalo roam.
I mean, hey, listen, it sucks that it's against the Nuggets, but there's another part of me that's like,
hey,
dude,
go Colorado. Go
Buffs. How about it?
Yeah.
We're fixing to find out. So we're with you, Nuggets. I'm with you. But, you know, you lose the next one. It's hard to see how you win this series. So, here we go. Big game. But you know, Chad, to stay optimistic, you win the next one, and then you got home court again.
Yeah.
For what could be a 7-game series. So, I'm not giving up on the Nuggets at all because I think they have the talent. I love Michael Malone as a coach. I love the things that he's been saying. I think he does have a process that works, so I believe in him. I believe in what the Avalanche are putting together, too. And boy, would the Flames have got to be reeling. But guess what with the Flames? As good as they were and having the number one seed this year, Chad, they didn't make the playoffs last year.
Right. It matters.
It matters.
Remove probably from the sentence. It matters. It absolutely does. And there's a difference between being a good regular season team and being a good playoff team. Not just in NBA, but also, as we're finding out, in the playoffs. I mean, in the Hockey League.
We've had the conversation a million times that would the Broncos have won two Super Bowls in a row had they not lost to Jacksonville, you know, leading up to that, which, you know, of course, talking to guys on that team, they'll tell you that was one of the most devastating losses of their lives and one of the worst losses in probably Broncos history based on who the Broncos were, who the who Jacksonville was at the time. It just was ridiculous that they actually lost that game.
I was actually at that game in the stands. One of the few games I've ever been in the stands.
You tell me, what was the feeling like?
I just couldn't believe it.
Nobody could, right?
I could literally because
could you like not believe it as it was happening? Like, what is happening here?
You know, back then, again, the Seahawks were in the AFC West, and I had played those Broncos twice that year. I knew how good they were. Right. I knew how talented they were. It made no sense to me.
How did you end up in the stands?
A buddy of mine worked at a radio station, had some tickets, so we sat together in the stands.
Just like, hey, you want to go to the game?
Yeah, I was like, you know what? Let's do it.
That must have been bizarre.
It was bizarre. Each time I'm in the stands at a football game, it feels bizarre.
How many times have you been in the stands?
Oh, man. Probably less than 8.
I mean, you've gone to plenty of football games, but generally in the press box, right?
Yeah.
Or in a suite or something like that.
Yes.
No, we're talking in the stands.
Paying for parking, the whole thing. Yeah, probably less than 8 times. 2 Super Bowls.
I don't even count Super Bowls.
Okay.
I wouldn't even, because they're kind of their own. So take away Super Bowls.
Oh, then less than 5 then. Definitely less than 5.
Ever a regular season game?
Yeah. Broncos, Steelers, Monday night.
Mm.
A couple years after I retired.
Just somebody like, let's go to the game.
I think I called up.
Oh, you wanted to go.
I called up Matt Russell. I was like, Matt, you know, let me buy some tickets. He gave me some great tickets. They were in a great section. And I think the Steelers won that game.
Were you waving a terrible towel around or something?
Nope.
Were you all were you wearing your
I was sitting in
black and yellow?
Matt Russell gave me the tickets. It's clearly going to be a Broncos section. He didn't give me tickets that one little slice of, you know, opposing tickets up at the top corner of the stadium. They were great seats, so I had to respect Matt, my buff brother, but you know, also respect the section. You don't show up there and wear your Steeler stuff.
How often do people come up to you in your life now and assume you played for the Broncos?
All the time. All the time.
How do they put it? Like, how do they present it to you?
It's usually, oh my gosh, it's Chad Brown. Hey, babe, come meet Chad. He played with the Broncos. I'm like, oh, it starts with a B, but it was the Buffs, not the Broncos. Oh, that's right.
All the time.
So you weren't ever with the Broncos? No, never. I had a couple conversations with Mike Shanahan, blah, 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 blah. But no, I was never actually with the Broncos.
That happens all the time.
All the time.
Oh, my God, too funny. And that's generally, do you ever just roll your eyes
never.
And say, oh, you always correct. Always correct.
Just because I'd hate to give the wrong impression. It's just easier to correct
that. Yeah, but sometimes it takes too much energy.
No. I always.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't want them to walk away with some twisted impression and make themselves look foolish later on. When they go to their buddy who actually knows football's house, and be like, man, I met Chad Brown. He was super cool. Wasn't he great with the Broncos? His friends would be like, what are you talking about, man?
You know, it was great talking to Ed. Did you enjoy our conversation we had with Ed yesterday? Ed,
that was fantastic on a couple of different levels. Again, I think Ed does a great job with his camp. I'm impressed with him, with all that he's got going on to coach and invest in some youth with the high school coaching. Obviously, had some success there. And then, you know, after the show, we almost talked for another hour.
It was that crazy? We just hung out for almost another hour, just the three of us just hanging out.
I left at 6:50. How much longer? He left with me.
Oh, no, yeah. 50 minutes.
Yeah, but it was fantastic.
Which was great, too.
Yeah. On air, it was great. Off air, it was fantastic. It's just, I think we answered the question that we never actually asked Ed about. Do you love football?
Yeah.
So for him to plan to come in for a 15-minute segment and spend an hour and 50 minutes talking football.
It was a blast.
I think that answers the question about as clearly as you could have an answer.
He loves football, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's been such a big part of his life. And, I mean, they really are, they could be the Kardashians of the NFL or football life. How about the McCaffrey's football life and what him and Lisa are, I mean, now with the kids out of the house, what they're going to attempt to try to do here in the next year is it's daunting to say the least, but so exciting as well.
The high school games, then trying every weekend to catch some kid playing or catch two kids playing. I give them props and kudos. A lot of hotels, a lot of airplane flights, but when you love your kids, it's what you do.
Oh, what a time of your life, though.
It crushes you to miss their games.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was a blast. And he should be in the Ring of Fame. It's, you know, you notice I didn't go there, right?
I'd be really curious just to read the...
There's something going on.
The bylaws on Ring of Fame. Is it literally, is it just what happens on the field? Is it taken into account that you're standing in the community? You know, how well you've represented the Broncos on and off the field?
It's a committee of people. I think there's four or five people on it, and they just, you know...
But they must have some type of criteria.
I think there's five... You have to be done for 5 years. They do that. Mm-hmm. And that's why Peyton's, you know, they're going to, even for Peyton, they're going to wait.
Right.
But
criteria is different than eligibility.
Yeah, you know I don't know.
5 years makes you eligible for it. You know, he played more than three seasons as a Broncos. That makes you eligible for it. But what's the criteria? How is it judged? Because are they just looking at some numbers? Or are they looking at, this is a dude has had an impact in this community.
I know.
That has gone.
Don't you think that should factor in?
It absolutely should.
Should be part of it.
Far beyond what he did on the field.
Like, can I just give you something, even though he's on another radio station? Dave Logan has done the games for 30 years. I mean, I get it. He didn't. Did Dave play for the Broncos?
My Dave Logan card hasn't played with the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, no, for sure there. I don't know if he had a dalliance with the Broncos at some level. Certainly not overly significant in terms of playing time if he did. But, like, how is Dave Logan not part of the Ring of Fame, to be quite honest with you?
Right.
You do the games for 30 years?
You should be.
And especially considering what he would mean to the Broncos community itself over all this time. Yeah.
He's identified, just like I'm apparently identified as a Bronco.
Misidentified.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Other broadcasters going to teams Hall of Fames. Myron Cope with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, my God. Who are the Steelers without Myron Cope?
The terrible towel. Yoinks.
Myron Cope. Pittsburgh Steelers.
Zoinks.
He was the terrible towel.
Yeah, that's his
Harry
name.
Carey. Harry Carey, not only in Chicago, but also in St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's just some guys that are just, and I think Dave's that guy.
Bit outside.
Okay, when we come back, I got another mock draft. Who's up for another, everybody with the mock? This is Kiper and McShay, though. It's Kiper and McShay. And I was part of a mock draft today that was just the dumbest thing of all time. Plus, I'll give you the details. It was so stupid. And it does pertain to the Broncos. And what John Gruden and Mike Mayock are doing is hysterical. So plenty to talk about. Pedro Gomez will join us at 3:45. The Rockies are back at it. But we'll address with Pedro, what do you do with a slumping player when you've promised him a ton of money? Pedro has some interesting examples. And like I said, at 4:30, Greg Carvel, the UMass head hockey coach, about the incredible Kale McCarr, all coming up here on The Drive.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
I love it. Fired up! The weekend is here. It's like 93 degrees.
Make a big noise, playing in the street. Gonna be a big man.
Seriously, what is the temperature? It's absurd.
You big disgrace.
Chad's wearing sunblock today. It's ridiculous.
Singing, we will.
I got my shorts on.
Welcome to Bronco Land.
We will rock you.
Welcome to Bronco Land.
Buddy, you're a young man, hard man, shouting in the street.
All right. Let me tell you my dumb mock story first, and then we'll get into the Kiper McShay thing.
Give it to me.
Which, again, is kind of dopey as well. So, there's these, you know, national radio networks that probably nobody really listens to, but you get hit up, you know, now and then to, and one of the bits, which is good, just takes a lot of work, is, you know, the mock draft where you go around the country. So it's kind of a fun bit to do. It just takes a lot of work. Because if you're a producer for a show, you know, that's 32 cities. You got to line up a guest to talk about. So sometimes they just do like top tens because they're kind of lazy. So it's CBS Sports Radio. And I have no idea, Chad, when this is going to be on, when it'll air. No clue. But they hit me up and I've been on with them before. And they said, hey, can you be our Broncos pick? I'm like, yeah, sure. Okay. It's going to take like 3 minutes out of my day. No big deal. And then they go, yeah, Devin White, TJ Hockenson, Ed Oliver are all gone, and Kyler Murray's still on the board. And Quinnen Williams is gone, and, you know, like anybody the Broncos would be interested in is gone, but Kyler Murray's still available, as are, you know, all the other quarterbacks. Like Haskins is available, Locke is available, you know, obviously Daniel Jones, you know, Murray, everybody's available. But every guy that we've kind of been talking, oh, Bush was gone too. So Devin Bush was gone. Devin White was gone. Hockenson was gone. Ed Oliver was gone. Quinnen Williams was gone. Bosa was gone. You see where I'm going
right,
here?
Right.
Like they're all gone.
They left you no place to go.
Right. And I can't trade back.
Well, who'd you go with?
Drew Locke. Think about that for a second.
For you.
Now, you have to understand, yeah. I think this is the dumbest mock draft of all time. And I said that with them. I'm saying, because they had a bunch of writers who are just, you know, we like writers. Kind of nerds. But, you know, sometimes these writers are just like, you think we're obnoxious as sports talk radio hosts. You think we got egos.
Oh, the writers. Yeah, there's
oh, my God.
Significant percentage of writers who are...
The ego on these
walk
people.
Walk into an NFL locker room and can out-ego almost every player.
Jeez.
It's fascinating.
And, you know, every city has that writer who's been there for, you know, 30 years. And usually they're at some dying newspaper and they're all bitter about life and, you know... Why doesn't anybody read the Saturday paper? There is no Saturday paper. But, you know, they tend to, you know, treat this stuff like it's some sort of holy grail, and they know better than everybody. So if you're one of these mocksters and you're not taking Kyler Murray, what are you talking about? And you're not taking any quarterbacks at all? Like, you're the Raiders? Think about this for a second.
So wait. You had the 10th pick, and the Broncos... For the Broncos, and you did not pick Kyler Murray?
No, I did not. Because I was doing the mock as how... I was trying to do him a favor and do the mock how I think John Elway would do it, not D-Mac. D-Mac would love D-Mac. Kyler Murray. Me, D-Mac, would love Kyler Murray.
Okay.
But do you understand if you get Kyler Murray, you've got to change everything around Kyler Murray?
Oh, yeah.
Like, we have done nothing... Nothing to insinuate we would have a offense for Kyler Murray.
This is
zero.
We've gone back to the old school, and Kyler Murray is all new school.
Right. Yeah. So why would I just be a total... I could have been a jerk and picked Kyler Murray and just screwed up the draft for everybody else on their ridiculous mock draft.
Right.
But I picked Drew Locke because under that scenario, if you can't trade back and everybody else is gone, Drew Locke actually makes sense. More so than Haskins, based on the visits they've had, the time they've spent, and just who John Elway kind of envisions as a quarterback. And who you would inevitably be high, which is Joe Flacco. And plus, you know, Haskins to me just makes me nervous, Chad, because he just hasn't played that much football compared to Drew Locke. Drew Locke's just played a lot more football, that's all. Mm-hmm. Anyways, that was that dumbness. Of course, none of that's going to happen. Because, right? Because if Kyler Murray doesn't go to the Cardinals, doesn't he go to the Raiders?
I'd have to think so.
Or doesn't somebody else do something dramatic to move up to go grab him?
Even if you just drafted him with the plan to do the Phillip Rivers, Eli Manning thing and yes, trade him for some value.
Exactly.
Pick up a second round pick for some team later in the first round.
Especially the Raiders. Yeah. Like, you've already got three first round picks. You'd be stupid not to just pick him up and then be able to deal him to somebody else for additional picks.
Right.
Stupid, dumb draft. Here is the...
But your face is going to be on it.
What do you mean?
Wasn't it a video thing?
Oh, no. It was just a phone thing. Oh. Video? Me? Did you... Stop.
I've seen some of these riders. You've got them beat.
That is a low bar, but I'll take the praise wherever I can find it. Thank you. Kiper versus McShay, a three-round mock projection. So on this one, they went back and forth. They didn't make their own picks. They just go back and forth. So they've got Kiper in round one taking Devin Bush. We've talked about this quite a bit. And he's got them taking Devin Bush with Drew Locke on the board. But, of course, you know, the other foolishness of, you know, Kyler Murray's not around. So what about that? What about Devin Bush at the number 10 pick, Chad? What do you think?
I think I said this, gosh, was it last week? That I was thinking either one of the Devins, and most likely it would be Bush because White would be gone. I think I may be a little high, but I think he's a player who can immediately help this defense. And if we're going with the thought that, hey, we got pieces in place to be a playoff team now and not building for the future, then it makes sense. Because he can help you this year, whereas any of the quarterbacks, most likely not.
Now, Ed's a little biased, but, you know, Ed thought Ed McCaffrey, who's, you know, kid goes to Michigan, but he thought Devin Bush would be great. And don't sleep on him. That was the message from Ed. Okay, round two, Todd McShay takes Deebo Samuel. Okay, we've been talking a lot about wide receivers, haven't we, Chad?
We have, absolutely.
And that's Deebo Samuel in the slot. Now, I tend to go with this. I like the selection. We know Deebo Samuel's been around. What would you think if Deebo Samuel was taken in the second round?
It wouldn't bother me. The need plus the fit and the talent of the player, I think, all work together. It's not, you know, if you're going to go with best player available and he's on that list for you, and you have the need at slot receiver, even if Emmanuel's able to come back and play, you know, games during the season, he's not going to be able to start the season at the slot, and he's not a long-term solution there.
I like the pick, too. You got to give some weapons to Joe Flacco one way or the other, yeah. And if it's a tight end or a receiver, wherever it's going, okay. Now, here's where the dumbness hits. It's Todd McShay, and he runs into Ryan Finley in the third round. And this is the dumbness of, this is the dumb, this is ultra khaki pants land. This is where Mike Evans lives. This is the idiocy of all idiocy. So think about this for a second. The Broncos have taken an inside linebacker and a wide receiver with all their other needs. Like, we're obviously trying to help Joe Flacco. The concept that you would take a player to sit on the bench maybe for his entire career over, say, an offensive lineman or an interior defensive lineman right here, to me is ridiculous. Do you agree with me on that, or do you disagree?
I completely agree, but just let's read the write-up from Todd McShay. He reads the defense better than any other QB in the class, and Denver needs someone to develop behind Joe Flacco because, let's face it, he isn't the answer.
Then if he's not the answer,
then what are you doing in the third round with picking a quarterback?
Take Drew Lock at 10.
Right.
If you really mean that,
right.
Flacco isn't the answer. If you really think that, then take whoever you think is the best quarterback. I know that sounds like me saying take whoever, but I'll let them decide who they think the best quarterback is and just take him at 10. So how can you be so dumb, Todd McShay, with a statement like that? How can you be so smart on so many other things and be that dumb with that analysis? It makes no sense, and this is why I will have, they said on the morning show that I look like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, who was catatonic when everything had gone wrong, and I promise you, that is exactly how I will feel. And if Ryan Finley is taken in the third round, Mike Evans, I will sit silent, stone-faced, and Mike Evans can, and I will wear a Ryan Finley jersey, and Mike Evans can sing Donka Shane and circle me around and around and around like Ferris Bueller.
Can we get a tattoo mixed in this scenario?
No tattoos.
Oh, you sure about that?
I'm giving you, I'll be Cameron from, I'll even wear a Red Wings jersey for the ultimate embarrassment.
Gotcha.
When we come back, ESPN's Pedro Gomez, what do you do with slumping players? Pedro has the answer next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Joined by ESPN's Pedro Gomez, presented by the Blake Street Tavern. Pedro, thanks for being on with us. How are you this afternoon?
I am well, and boy, what a difference a week makes.
I know! See? Never any doubts about it!
Oh, now, listen to you.
Well, listen, what our last conversation was, if they're 10 games under 500 by April, it's over. And,
yeah.
And I do believe that would have been the case, but what a difference a week makes. And it's not incredible. I mean, they're 7-12. They're 5 games back, 5 games under. But listen, anything can go and happen from there. So let me ask you this. What do you think? Why do you think the turnaround happened? What do you think's behind it?
Well, probably desperation more than anything. You could tell by what the players were saying after losses that they knew we got to do something. And these guys have played long enough to know April can be a make or break month for you in terms of the full season. So, you know, the fact that they have played first place clubs and beaten them the last three games, you know, the one against the Phillies yesterday and then the two against the Padres earlier this week, those are really good indicators of where this club is right now. Nolan Arenado's hitting. They get a couple of guys off the DL. One of them goes off for two home runs yesterday in McMahon. You know, Dahl is back. They expect a lot of things out of Dahl. So there's a lot of reasons, but the pitching, the starting pitching, Germán Márquez, Kyle Freeland, Sensatella, you look at the starting pitching, and it always starts and ends with pitching. They're going to hit. Yeah, they were slumping, but they were going to hit. That's what the Rockies always do. So it really centered around the starting pitching, and that's what's come around.
We had one of our hosts on the show, Zach, who's a great guy, and he said earlier today, it looks like Charlie Blackmon got really old really quick. And when he said it, I was like, boy, he may be right about that. Let me check in with you. Well, how do you think Charlie just looks out there?
Well, I mean, look, when you're struggling, you always look bad. And he is struggling, and, you know, he goes 8 for his next 14, and all of a sudden, you know, the opposite's going to be said.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think that that's why they call it an average. It's your average for the entire season. It's not your average for a two-week span. It's for the entire season. I would say let's hold out on that. We're still in April. We're still a good, you know, 10 days away from the end of the month. So we're not even 1 month into the season. I would say let's exercise some caution. The same way I was saying the end is not here yet for this Rockies club. There's way too much talent on this roster. You know, one of the other things I think that's really important is, they've only won one game at home. It was last night. But this is a club that needs to win at home because they will. They will win at home. The issue is winning on the road, and they've been doing that. You know, the last two seasons, they've had winning records on the road. They've made the postseason both of those years. So I would say the winning at home is going to come. The winning on the road is really something to be held on to and say, okay, things are going not as bad as maybe everybody thinks.
Where is that breaking point where a club just has to take a big gulp? I mean, a massive gulp and move on. Where do you think that comes?
That comes from the owner. Because the GM can only do so much. The GM is not going to be responsible for getting rid of a contract like that and having the club pay.
Right.
It has to come from above. So it would have to be Monfort saying, that's enough. We've seen enough. We need the roster spot. That's more important than anything we're getting. So, you know, clubs have done that. They've done that. Mm-hmm. Hanley Ramirez and Pablo Sandoval with the Red Sox are two recent examples of that happening. But even if you go to a smaller market team, it has happened. The Diamondbacks had Russ Ortiz for a lot of money and decided he's just not helping us. We'll just eat the money. And it came from Ken Kendrick, the owner. So it has to come from the owner.
All right. So in terms of just handling the situation, then, see, I think this is really complicated. This is what I'm trying to say on the air here. It's not as simple as send him down to AAA or.
Well, you can't. You can't.
Right.
He has more service time. He can refuse that assignment, be released, and the club owes him every cent of that contract.
Right. That's where it gets to, oh, my elbow, oh, my arm, oh, my, you know, whatever. And it's one of these phony baloney sort of deals. And I'm sure that's complicated, too, because if he's not complicit with even doing that, then he's got kind of power there. So my question is, if you're Bud Black, now this is where it's really tricky to me, Pedro. If you're a manager and you know the money sunk into this guy, how do you sit that guy? Like, how does that work? Like, what communication goes from the manager to the GM about things like that?
Yeah, in this day and age, it has to be a decision made by everyone in the system.
It can't be just the coach. The coach just...
No, it cannot be just Bud Black, the manager. It cannot just be Bud Black. Bud Black can go to Jeff Breidich and say, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
And Breidich can say, absolutely not. We're not doing that. or Breidich can say, Bud, we're with you. Absolutely. You do what you think you need to do to get this club going and maybe to get him going. And sometimes, you know, sometimes benching a guy does work. Not always, but sometimes it does. And look, Desmond had a nice game earlier this week in that win over San Diego. I think it was the first win over San Diego on Monday. He had a really nice game. So, you know, if you're Bud Black, you at least say, okay, it's there. Somewhere deep down there, it's there.
Right.
And we got to keep riding him until we know it's not there.
Yeah, I always think of Moneyball. What a great scene that was, you know, about, you know, who were playing at first base. And I say that you've got to have a connection between your manager and your GM. Got to. And if you don't, you're just going to have a lousy organization, right?
Well, and that exists at every point in Major League Baseball this day.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Great stuff, Pedro. Great insight. There's enough history out there that says it might not work out, but there's enough history that says if you give it time and patience, it could be just fine. So,
again, like I said, it has to come from within. Yeah. It has to come from the player himself.
Okay. Great stuff. Thank you, Pedro. Have a great weekend.
Okay. We'll see ya.
That's Pedro Gomez, presented by Blake Street Tavern. When we come back, a player you need to know, our Football at Four spotlight, tight end style. That's next.